Chapter 20. Jiangai Pass. Under the looming spine of the world, Ran guided Jiaden up the stony slope from the foothills that began the foot of Jiangai Pass. The Dragon Wall pierced the sky, dwarfing all other mountains, its snow-capped peaks defying the baking afternoon sun. The tallest thrust well above the clouds that mocked the waste with promises of rain that had never come. Ran could not imagine why a man would want to climb a mountain, but it was said that men who had tried to scale these heights turned back, overcome with fear and unable to breathe. He could well believe that a man might grow too afraid to breathe, attempting to climb so high. "Yet though the Kyrianen are consumed with the game of houses," Moraine was saying at his shoulder, "they will follow you so long as they know that you are strong. Be firm with them, but I would ask you to be fair also. A ruler who gives true justice." He tried to ignore her, as he did the other riders, and the creak and rumble of Kadir's wagons, making heavy going further back. The broken gorges and gullies of the waste were behind them, but these rugged rising hills, nearly as barren, were little better for wagons. No one had traveled this path in over 20 years. Moraine talked at him that way from daybreak to sunset whenever he let her. Her lectures could be on small things, details of court behavior, say, in Kyrian or Saldea or somewhere else, or on large, the political influence of the White Cloaks, or perhaps the effects of trade on rulers' decisions to go to war. It was as if she meant to see him educated, as a noble would be, or should be, before he reached the other side of the mountains. It was surprising how often what she said reflected what anyone back in Emmons Field would have called simple common sense, and also how often it did not. Occasionally she came out with something startling. For instance, that he should trust no woman of the tower except herself, Egwene, Elaine, and Nynaeve, or the news that Elida was now the Amarlan seat. Oath to obey or no, she would not tell him how she knew that. She said it was someone else's place to tell if she chose, someone else's secret, and she could not usurp it. He suspected the Wise One Dreamwalkers, though they had stared him right in the eye and refused to say aye or nay. He wished he could make them swear Moraine's oath. They interfered between him and the chiefs continually, as if they wanted him to go through them to reach the chiefs. Right that minute, he did not want to think about Elida or the Wise Ones or listen to Moraine. Now he wanted to study the pass ahead, a deep gap in the mountains that twisted as though a blunt axe had tried to chop through again and again, never quite succeeding. A few minutes' hard ride, and he could be in it. On one side of the pass mouth, a sheer cliff had been smoothed over 100 pace width and carved, a wind-weathered snake entwining a staff a good 300 spans high. Monument or marker or ruler's sigil, it surely dated from some lost nation before Arthur Hawkwing, perhaps even before the Trolloc Wars. He had seen remnants before from nations long vanished. Often even Moraine did not know their source. High on the other side, so far up that he was not sure he was seeing what he thought, just below the snow line, stood something even stranger. Something that made the first monument of a few 1,000 years a commonplace. He could have sworn it was the remnants of shattered buildings, shining gray against the darker mountain, and stranger still, what appeared to be a dock of the same material as for ships, slanting drunkenly down the mountain. If he was not imagining it, that had to date from before the breaking. The face of the world had been changed utterly in those years. This could well have been an ocean's floor before. He would have to ask Asmodian. Even if he had had the time, he did not think he would want to try reaching that altitude to find out for himself. At the foot of the huge snake lay Tyon, a high-walled town of moderate size, a remnant itself of the time when Kyrian had been allowed to send caravans across the threefold land, and wealth had flowed from Shara along the Silk Path. There appeared to be birds above the town, and dark blotches at regular intervals along the gray stone walls. Matt stood in Pips's stirrups, shading his eyes with that broad-brimmed hat to peer up the pass, frowning. Lan's hard face wore no expression at all. Yet he appeared just as intent. A gust of wind, a little cooler here, whipped his color-shifting cloak around him, and for a moment all of him from shoulders to boots seemed to blend into the rocky hills and sparse thorn bushes.
"Are you listening to me?" Moraine said suddenly,
reining her white mare closer.
"You must—"
She took a deep breath.
"Please, Rand, there is so much that I must tell you, so much that you need to know."
The hint of pleading in her tone made him glance at her. He could remember when he had been overawed by her presence. Now she seemed quite small, for all her regal manner. A fool thing that he should feel protective of her.
"There is plenty of time ahead of us, Moraine," he said gently. "I don't pretend to think I know as much of the world as you. I mean to keep you close from now on."
He barely realized how great a change that was from when she was keeping him close.
"But I have something else in my mind right now."
"Of course," she sighed, "as you wish. We have plenty of time yet."
Rand heeled the dappled gray stallion to a trot, and the others followed. The wagons quickened too, though they could not keep up on the slope. Asmodeans, Jason the Tails, patch-covered Gleeman's cloak rippled behind him like the banner he carried at his stirrup, brilliant red with the white and black symbol of the ancient Aes Sedai at its center. His face wore a sullen glower. He had not been best pleased at having to be the bannerman. Under that sign, he would conquer, the prophecy of Roydian said, and perhaps it would not frighten the world so much as the dragon banner, Luz Theron's banner, that he had left flying over the Stone of Tyr. Few would know this sign. The blotches on the walls of Tyon were bodies, contorted in their final agonies, bloated in the sun and hanging by their necks in a row that seemed to encircle the town. The birds were glossy black ravens and vultures with their heads and necks befouled. Some ravens perched on corpses, gorging, unconcerned for the new arrivals. The sickly sweet stench of corruption hung in the dry air, and the acrid smell of char. Iron-strapped gates stood gaping open on an expanse of ruin, soot-streaked stone houses, and collapsed roofs. Nothing moved except the birds.
"Like Maruwa."
He tried to shake the thought away, but in his head he could see that great city after it was retaken, immense towers blackened and collapsing, the remains of great bonfires at every street crossing, where those who had refused to swear to the shadow had been bound and thrown alive to the flames. He knew whose memory it had to be, though he had not discussed it with Moraine.
"I am Randall Thor. Luz Theron Telamon is dead 3,000 years. I am myself."
That was one battle he meant to win. If he did have to die at Shael Ghul, he would die as himself. He made himself think of something else. Half a month since he had left Ruidian. Half a month, though the Aiel had set a pace afoot from sunup to sundown that wearied the horses. But Cooladin had been moving this way a week before he learned of it. If they had not managed to close any ground, he would have that long to ravage Kyrian before Rand could reach it. Longer before the Shidel could be brought to bay. Not a much happier thought.
"There's someone watching us from those rocks to the left," Lan said quietly. He seemed to be completely engrossed in studying what remained of Tyon. "Not Aiel, or I doubt I would have seen a glimmer."
Rand was glad that he had made Egwene and Avienda stay with the Wise Ones. The town gave him a new reason, but the Watcher fit in with his original plan, when he had hoped that Tyon had escaped. Egwene still wore the same Aiel clothes as Avienda, and Aiel would not have been very welcome in Tyon. They were even less likely to be welcome among the survivors. He looked back at the wagons, drawing to a halt a short distance downslope. Mutters drifted up from the drivers now that they could see the town clearly and the wall's decorations. Kadir, his bulk all in white again today, mopped at his hawk-nosed face with a large kerchief. He appeared unperturbed, merely pursing his lips thoughtfully. Rand expected that Moraine would have to find new drivers once they were through the pass.
Kadir and his crew would likely flee as soon as they had the chance. And he would have to let them go. It was not right. It was not justice. But it was necessary to protect Asmodian. How long now had he been doing what was necessary instead of what was right? In a fair world, they would be one and the same. That made him laugh, a hoarse wheeze. He was far from the village boy he had been, but sometimes that boy sneaked up on him. The others looked at him, and he fought the urge to tell them that he was not mad yet. Long minutes passed before two coatless men and a woman emerged from the rocks, all three ragged and dirty and barefoot. They approached hesitantly, heads tilted uneasily, eyes darting from rider to rider, to the wagons and back as though they might take flight at a shout. Gaunt cheeks and wavering steps spoke of hunger.
"Thank the light," one of the men said finally.
He was gray-haired. None of the three was young. His face deeply creased. His eyes lingered a moment on Asmodian, with falls of lace at collar and cuffs, but the leader of this train would not be riding a mule and carrying a banner. It was Rand's stirrup that he clutched anxiously.
"A light be praised that you came out of those terrible lands alive, my lord."
That might have been Rand's blue silk coat embroidered in gold in the shoulders, or the banner, or simple flattery. The man certainly had no reason to think them other than merchants, if well dressed for it.
"Those murdering savages have risen again. It is another Aiel war. They were over the wall in the night before anybody knew, killing everyone who raised a hand, stealing everything not mortared in place."
"In the night," Matt said sharply. Hat pulled low, he was still studying the ruined town.
"Were your sentries asleep? You did have sentries this close to your enemies. Even Aiel would have a hard time coming at you if you kept a good watch."
Lan gave him an appraising look.
"No, my lord."
The gray-haired man blinked at Matt, then gave his answer to Rand. Matt's green coat was fine enough for a lord, but it hung open and looked slept in.
We had only a watchman at each gate. It has been long since any have even seen one of the savages. But this time, whatever they did not steal, they burned, and drove us out to starve. Filthy animals! Thank the light you have come to save us, my lord, or we would all have died here. I am Talnethan. I was a saddle maker. A good one, my lord. This is my sister Aril, and her husband, Undercoral. He makes fine boots.
They stole people too, my lord,
the woman said, her voice raw. Somewhat younger than her brother, she might have been handsome once, but haggard worry had etched lines in her face that Rand suspected would never entirely go away. Her husband had a lost look in his eyes, as if not exactly sure where he was.
"My daughter, my lord, and my son. They took all the young ones, everyone above 16 and some twice that or more. Said they were guy something, and stripped them naked right in the street and herded them off. My lord, can you?"
She trailed off, eyes squeezing shut as the impossibility overwhelmed her, swaying. Small odds that she would ever see her children again. Moraine was out of her saddle in an instant, and by Aril's side. The haggard woman gave a loud gasp as soon as the Aes Sedai's hands touched her, shivering to her toe-tips. Her wondering look turned to Moraine questioningly, but Moraine only held her as if supporting her. The woman's husband suddenly gaped, staring at Rand's gilded belt buckle, the gift from Avienda.
"His arms were marked like that! Like that! All twined around, like the cliff snake!"
Tal looked up at Rand uncertainly.
"The savage's leader, my lord. He had markings like that on his arms. He wore those strange clothes they all do, but he had his coat sleeves cut off, and he made sure everybody saw."
"A gift I received in the waste," Rand said. He made sure to keep his hands still on his pommel. His coat sleeves hid his own dragons, except for the heads. They would be visible on the backs of his hands to anyone who looked closely. Aril had forgotten about wondering what Moraine had actually done, and all three looked on the point of running. "How long since they left?"
6 days, my lord.
Tal said uneasily.
They did what they did in a night and a day, and were gone the next. We would have gone too, but what if we met them coming back? Surely they were turned back at Selene?
That was the town at the other end of the pass. Rand doubted that Selene was in any better condition than Tyen by this time. How many survivors are there besides you three?
Maybe 100, my lord. Maybe more. Nobody has counted.
Abruptly, anger flared in him, though he tried to hold it down.
100 of you.
His voice was icy iron.
And 6 days. Then why are your dead left for the ravens? Why do corpses still decorate your town walls? Those are your people filling your nostrils with their stink.
Huddling together, the three backed away from his horse.
We were afraid, my lord,
Tal said hoarsely.
They went, but they could come back. And he told us, the one with the markings on his arms, told us not to touch anything. A message,
Ander said in a dull voice.
He chose them out to hang, just pulling them out until he had enough to line the wall. Men, women, he did not care.
His eyes were fixed on Rand's buckle.
He said they were a message for some man who would be following him. He said he wanted this man to know what they were going to do on the other side of the spine. He said he would do worse to this man.
Arl's eyes widened suddenly, and the three stared beyond Rand for a moment, gaping. Then, screaming, they turned and ran. Black-veiled Aiel rose from the rocks they had come from, and they darted off in another direction. Veiled Aiel appeared there, too, and they collapsed to the ground, sobbing and holding each other as they were surrounded. Moraine's face was cool and composed, but her eyes were not serene. Rand twisted in his saddle. Ruark and Derek were coming up the slope, unveiling themselves and unwrapping the shufa from around their heads. Derek was thicker than Ruark, with a prominent nose and paler streaks through his golden hair. He had brought the rain, Aiel, as Ruark said he would. Timolin and his Mia Goma had been paralleling them to the north for 3 days, exchanging occasional messengers but giving no clue to his intentions. The Kodara and the Shianda and the Darin were still somewhere to the east. Following, so Amis and the others said from dream-talking to their wise ones, but slowly. Those wise ones had no more idea of their clan chief's aims than Rand did of Timolin's.
Was that necessary? He said as the two chiefs came up to him.
He had frightened the people first, but for cause, and had not made them think that they were going to die. Ruark simply shrugged, and Derek said, We put spears in place around this hold unseen as you wished, and there seemed no reason to wait since no one remained here to dance spears. Besides, they are only tree killers. Rand drew a deep breath. He had known this might be as large a problem as Culloden in its own way. Nearly 500 years ago, the Aiel had presented Kyrian with a sapling, a cutting from Avendisora, and with it, a right granted to no other nation, to trade across the threefold land to Shara. They had given no reason. They did not like wetlanders very much at the best. But to the Aiel, it had been required by Gieto. During the long years of journey that had brought them to the waste, only one people had not attacked them. Only one had allowed them water uncontested when the world grew parched. And finally they had found the descendants of those people, the Kyrianin. For 500 years riches had flowed into Kyrian with the silk and the ivory. 500 years, and Avendor Aldera grew in Kyrian. And then King Laemon had cut the tree down to make a throne. The nations knew why the Aiel had crossed the spine of the world 20 years ago. Laemon's sin, they called it, and Laemon's pride. But few knew that to the Aiel, it had not been a war. 4 clans had come to find an oathbreaker, and when they had killed him, they returned to the threefold land. But their contempt for the tree killers, the oathbreakers, had never died. Moraine being Aes Sedai offset her being Kyrianin, but Rand was never sure how much. These folk broke no oaths, he told them. Find the others.
The saddlemaker says there are about 100. And be gentle with them. If any of them were watching, they're probably running away into the mountains by now.
The two Aiel started to turn away, and he added,
Do you hear what they told me? What do you think of what Culloden did here?
They killed more than they had to, Derek said with a disgusted shake of his head. Like black ferrets falling on rock hens' nests in a gully.
Killing was as easy as dying, so the Aiel said. Any fool could do either.
And the other thing, taking prisoners? Gaishain?
Ruark and Derek exchanged looks, and Derek's mouth tightened. Clearly they had heard, and it made them uncomfortable. It took a great deal to make an Aiel uncomfortable.
It cannot be so, Ruark said at last. If it is, Gaishain is a thing of Jieto. No one can be made Gaishain who does not follow Jieto, else they are only human animals, such as the Sharans keep.
Culloden has abandoned Jieto.
Derek sounded as though he were saying stones had grown wings. Matt guided Pips closer, using his knees. He had never been more than an indifferent rider, but sometimes, when he was thinking of something else, he rode as though born on a horse's back.
That surprises you, he said. After everything he has done already, the man would cheat at dice with his mother.
They gave him flat-eyed stares, like blue stones. In many ways, Aiel were Jieto. And whatever else Culloden was, he was still Aiel in their eyes. Sept before clan, clan before outsiders, but Aiel before wetlanders. Some of the maidens joined them, Anila and Jolene and Adeline, and wiry white-haired Sulin, who had been chosen roof mistress of the Roof of the Maidens in Ruidian. She had told the maidens who stayed to choose another, and now she led the maidens here. They sensed the mood and said nothing, only grounded their spear points patiently. An Aiel who wanted to could make the rocks look hasty. Lan broke the silence.
If Culloden expects you to be following him, he may have left a surprise somewhere in the pass. 100 men could hold some of those narrows against an army. 1,000?
We will camp here, then, Rand said. And send scouts ahead to make sure the way is clear.
Duada Madiin?
Water seekers, Derek agreed, sounding pleased.
That had been his society before he became clan chief. Sulin and the other maidens gave Rand flat stares as the rain chief walked away downslope. He had chosen scouts from other societies for the last 3 days when he had begun to fear what he might find here, and he had the feeling they knew he was not just giving the others their turns. He tried to ignore their looks. Sulin's was especially difficult. The woman could have driven nails with those pale blue eyes.
Ruark, once the survivors are found, see that they're fed and well-treated. We will take them with us.
His gaze was drawn to the town wall. Some Aiel were already using their curved horn bows to kill ravens. Sometimes Shadowspawn used ravens and other animals that fed on death as spies. Shadow eyes, the Aiel called them. These barely paused in the frenzied feeding until they fell transfixed with an arrow. But a wise man did not take chances with ravens or rats.
And see that the dead are buried. At least in that, right and necessity were the same.